Welcome into the Diamond Vols podcast. I'm Ben McKee, joined by Ryan Shumpert, here for a preview of the biggest weekend in Tennessee baseball in quite some time. For the first time since 2005, Tennessee is in the Super Regionals, and Ryan and I are going to discuss this weekend. Ryan and I have not been with the good people since Saturday when Tennessee beat Liberty the first time. I've been under the weather all week, so we do apologize for not getting a podcast to you all sooner, but better late than never, I guess it is. Ryan, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. I said it feels like it's – every time we go like more than a day without talking, it feels like it's been a long time since we've recorded one of these. But a solid finish to the regional for Tennessee, taking care of business, and obviously a really, really exciting weekend to preview.
Absolutely. And let's put a bow on this past weekend real quick before we move on to the Super Regional. Obviously, you and I did record a podcast after the first two weekends of the Knoxville Regional, after Drew Gilbert's walk-off Grand Slam, after Tennessee's big win over Liberty. And then on Sunday, Tennessee did come back and play Liberty once again because Liberty eliminated Duke earlier in the day, and it wasn't that dramatic of a ball game. Will Heflin got the start, ran into a little bit of trouble, but Sean Hundley was able to come in and get Tennessee out of the jam, and Tennessee was able to go on and win 3-1, and there was quite the celebration in Lindsey Nelson Stadium afterwards.
There was. It was a rowdy crowd, excited crowd, but I think the celebration was punctuated the most by the head man himself, Tony Vitello. He ran down and somersaulted into his players. I think that was the second time this year he's had the sprint from doing the post-game interview with SEC Network to the players when he used the slide, I guess. Was that against Arkansas or maybe the Vanderbilt one? I don't remember. He'd used the slide, so he had to break out another move and did the somersault, and then really cool seeing Vitello go out into the stands and celebrate with the fans. And man, I mean, his energy, it's just so affectuous. And it wasn't even like even the Bruce Pearl days. He'd go into fans and, you know, he's taking pictures and high fiving. But it was like Tony was in the stands like it was Drew Gilbert had just hit the walk off home run against Wright State. That's how he was behaving in the stands. He was aggressively high fiving people, he was shoving people. I mean, He was riled up, and I mean, it just shows his personality completely, and I know how much it meant to him to get a regional win, and it's just another big step this weekend. How many times we've heard him talk in his 4 years here about dreaming of what a regional could look like at Tennessee and Knoxville. He got that wish. He kind of saw that fulfilled, and I think everything he's been building has been building to get to Omaha, and he has a chance to see that kind of dream fulfilled this week.
And comparing him to Bruce Pearl is very fitting, Ryan, because Tony Vitello is this decade's Bruce Pearl.
Yes. I mean, it really is. I mean, a program that was very dead when both of them took over, and not only being really, really good head coaches, which both of them are, really good recruiters, which both of them are. I think Bruce maybe gets into the dirty recruiting a little more than Tony does, has a little bit more help in the good recruiting front. But just energizers, people that can pump up a program and get people excited. And it's hard not to compare what Vitello's done to what Pearl's done, because just the energy and the excitement that Pearl brought to Tennessee basketball. And look, Tennessee already had a 20,000-seat arena that went from being completely empty to Bruce Pearl filled it. Now Tony Vitello went from having a little 4,200-seat stadium that no one would go to they can't get anywhere close to the amount of people that want to get in. So it's a lot of similarities, and really, honestly, in my opinion, even more impressive what Vitello has done on the baseball front.
Absolutely, and you summed it up perfectly. Just the lack of interest in the basketball program when Bruce Pearl took over, very similar to the lack of interest that baseball had when Tony Vitello took over, and just very similar personalities, not afraid to tell people what they think, and they wear their emotions on the sleeve, and it gets them in trouble at times. And when I say that, I mean nobody else in the league likes them. Tony Vitello is the epitome of you love him if he's your coach and you hate him if he's not. And Bruce Pearl was in that same mold, and you've even seen some Tennessee fans turn on Bruce Pearl since he got to Auburn. So very similar personalities and just where the programs were, a very similar trajectory.
And one thing that I think both of them have been able to appeal themselves when they were at Tennessee, in Pearl's case, to UT fans so much is just how much they embraced everything about Tennessee. You had Bruce Pearl. He was painting up for the Lady Vols game, and he was jumping on a Memphis reporter when he had the audacity to compare the Memphis-Tennessee basketball rivalry to the Tennessee football rivalry, saying, how dare you disrespect Tennessee football like that? And you see the same thing with Tony Vitello. I mean, he talks about when he grew up, watched Fallen, Phil Fulmer, and Pat Summitt. And I remember 2 years ago, he was talking about how awesome it was going into living rooms to recruit, and they flip on the TV and the basketball team's kicking everybody's butt. Or he may have been a little more explicit with it when he was talking to us about it. But just both of those guys fully embraced everything about Tennessee. And I think that's led, on top of just the success they had, to really the fans fully embraced them and loved them.
I'm going to plant a thought in your brain, Shumpert. You might want to set that glass of water down. Go ahead and swallow that water, because your head is about to explode. Just picture this. Tony Vitello as head baseball coach, Bruce Pearl as basketball coach, and Lane Kiffin as the football coach, all on campus at the same time.
Oh, my goodness. After the second one, I was like, where's he going with this? And it hit me half a second before he said Kiffin. I'm like, he's going with Kiffin. Oh, my God. I mean, Tennessee fans, I mean, there would be a lot of crazy things about that. But the thing that just sticks in my head is Tennessee fans would be the most insufferable people on Twitter. And, I mean, there would be no stopping. I mean, as much as the SEC hates Tennessee fans now, I mean, I can't even imagine the case if you had those three guys as opinionated and fearless as they are leading the way. Tennessee fans they'd be on fire. They would literally be on fire, and they'd be living their best life on Twitter, that's for sure.
Yes, that would be quite amazing. I think Bruce Pearl would love to be back at Tennessee. Lane Kiffin, Monty Kiffin, his dad, former Tennessee defensive coordinator, has said that he thinks that they should not have left for USC. So imagine those three on campus all at the same time. That's what I couldn't help but think of when you were discussing Bruce Pearl there. Ooh, that would be quite the that'd be quite the year each year for us media folks. That to go from Bruce Pearl to Lane Kiffin to Tony Vitello.
We'd have the easiest job in the world. I mean, that would be sports writer heaven right there.
Yeah, it would for sure. But moving forward to this weekend, Tennessee will host Oregon, or not Oregon, will host LSU, because LSU upset Oregon. I mentioned Oregon because it leads into my next question for you, Ryan. Do you think it is a good thing that Tennessee is going to play LSU, or do you think Oregon would have been the better matchup?
I think Oregon probably would have been the better matchup from talking about sports writer's perspective. Certainly glad it's LSU. Should be more entertaining, better storyline. But I just go back to, and again, I don't think I say all this, Tennessee shouldn't be afraid of LSU. I think Tennessee's the better team than LSU. But I think LSU has that top level, top half of their lineup talent is really, really good. They've certainly a program that is used to playing in these moments. Five College World Series appearances under Paul Mainieri, one of the most successful programs of all time. I will say this, and I wrote about this. This is the one thing where it's a little bit different, because while typically you'd say these guys have played in this environment, and they have played, and by the end of the year they were playing in some full capacity, intense environments. But this year wasn't full capacity, and two of LSU's best players, probably LSU's two best players, are true freshmen. So to a degree, they really haven't played in something quite like this, but still a lot of it more familiar with the moment. Whereas Oregon, can't imagine, especially this year, there's hardly been anyone at any of their games out playing out in the West Coast. Obviously, there was not a whole lot of fans there this weekend for the regional. It seemed like LSU almost had more people at the region championship game. An Oregon program that, obviously, they've had a good year, they're a good team, but they took advantage of what was a down Pac-12 and a program that's traditionally not had a ton of success. This was the first time they'd made the NCAA tournament since 2015. And you watched them play. And this part, I'm almost going into dumb sports fan mode. But you watched them at the end of that game, And it just seemed like watching them play, it was, I just got the vibe that, like, these guys will not be able to handle the rowdiness in the stage at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. I mean, I just watched that pitcher throw over to first base time and time and time again when the dude was standing like a foot off the bag and then balk to go and bring in the winning run. And I was like, maybe my dumb sports mind is right on this one, because, like, that's just not being ready for the moment type of behavior. And I go back. I think the teams are pretty even. Oregon may be a little bit more talented. But, again, Tennessee has more talent than LSU. I think Tennessee's a better team than LSU. But just all things considered, I think that Oregon matchup may have been a little bit better for them.
Yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from. But I think it would have been – I think it is better that Tennessee got LSU instead of Oregon. And I'm just keeping it simplistic and very simple. And I believe that – Oregon is the better baseball team. I know that LSU just beat them. LSU played a great weekend of baseball, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they are the better team. I don't think there's a grave difference between the two, but I do think that that Oregon team is a little more experienced and has more depth than this LSU baseball team does. So for that reason alone, just keeping it simplistic, who's the better baseball team? Yes, I realize LSU just beat Oregon. Great weekend of baseball for LSU. But I do think that Oregon was the better baseball team. So that's my simplistic way of looking at it. But I do get that if you play Oregon, you don't have to deal with the storylines, whether Paul Menieri is right, wrong, or whatever, whether the players should feel the way that they felt about the hostile environment last time they were here in March. That whether they're right or wrong, that is going to put a chip on LSU's shoulder. And if you're playing Oregon, you don't have to deal with that. You also don't have to deal with the players trying to send Paul Menieri out on a high note as he rides off into the sunset to retire. So there are storylines that are going to spark and energize LSU this weekend. But, Ryan, I don't think we have to worry about Tennessee being ready to go. This baseball team will be ready to play. So just keeping it simplistic, I thought Oregon was the better baseball team. And LSU, they had a good weekend of baseball, but their total body of work isn't that great. And there's a lot of people that feel like they only got into the NCAA tournament because of Paul Menieri retiring. And because people are on the selection committee, people who have emotions and feelings, and they're not robots. It's not a computer picking who makes the tournament. Those emotions led to Paul Menieri and LSU making the tournament. So not that LSU is a bad team. I think LSU is more than capable of beating Tennessee this weekend, not trying to communicate that at all. But again, for the zillionth time, I just look at that Oregon team. I think they were better than this LSU team.
Yeah. And I mean, I see that argument. And like you said, I think it's probably close. I honestly think they're pretty even. I mean, you look at LSU, like you said, the body of the work doesn't blow you away, but when you take out their disastrous start to SEC play, and they went 12-9 the last 7 weeks. So they weren't kind of bad. I mean, they weren't bad or below average or even, I mean, they were solid after the, and again, they played three of their hardest series, their first three. So that plays into it, but they were really solid after that. And after they kind of figured out how they were going to replace Jaden Hill, they played well, I thought. And again, not the best team in the world in most years if it's a strong bubble or even a normal bubble. I'm not sure LSU gets into the tournament. Like you said, they really capitalized on a weak bubble and then kind of having the emotion of Paul Menieri. But LSU's played better the second half of the season. The big point, and the point you made that I think is really important, is the depth is what concerns me if I'm LSU. Because LSU has some really, really talented guys, some guys that are some of the best players in the country. But 1-9, I don't think it's what Tennessee's seen from Wright State's lineup, what they would have seen from Oregon's lineup, and certainly not what they saw from a lot of SEC lineups this year.
And this LSU team is different at this point in the season. Dylan Cruz, the baseball equivalent of a five-star. He's really the baseball equivalent of a Jadeveon Clowney, a Bryce Brown coming out of high school. He was viewed as kind of the top guy, one of the top guys in – somebody who probably could have been a first-round pick if his asking price wasn't so high. He will be a first-round pick one day. He has the potential to be number one overall, be selected number one overall when it's his draft year. He's no longer a freshman. Trey Morgan, who is their who has been their best hitter. He's hitting 363 heading into this weekend. Torched Tennessee earlier in the season when he played here in Knoxville. He was excellent. He was probably the best player on the field that weekend. Him and Evan Russell were the two best players on the field that weekend in March at Lindsey Nelson. He's a freshman, but my point is at this time of the year, Ryan, he's not a freshman anymore. They've played so much baseball. They have so much baseball under their belt. They've experienced so many things. They won't have experienced a crowd like this just yet. LSU may have gone to Ole Miss when Ole Miss opened up things. But I think even though Ole Miss has a great crowd, that crowd's bigger. I don't think it's going to be as rowdy as this crowd, especially when you, Tennessee fans are kind of the flames and Paul Maneri's comments are gas, and you're throwing that gas on the fire. It's going to make for the rowdiest bunch of, you know, what's in on this side of the, I don't even know, but you all get what I'm trying to get, what picture I'm trying to paint. So I don't think that they've experienced the rowdiness that they'll experience this weekend, but they have experienced a ton. And just in that regard alone, this is a different baseball team than what we saw when they came in March.
No doubt. And that was something about Paul Maneri's comments that always was odd to me or stood out to me. He talked about, you know, they were in our head, which I thought for one was just a really weird thing to say about your team at a time you're not playing very good baseball, to say that to the media. And two, I think he specifically said Trey Morgan, and it was like, Trey Morgan had one of the best – that weekend had one of the best weekends of anybody we've seen all season at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. I mean, he could not get him out, and more times than not, it wasn't a single. It was an extra base hit. So, you're right. There's a lot of young players on this LSU team, and that was the second SEC series of the year. So, they've done a lot of growing. But at the same time, so is Blade Tidwell for Tennessee. I mean, the improvements he's made, and specifically the improvements he's made in his consistency – since the LSU series cannot be undersold at all. I mean, he has gotten so, so much better and has been so much better on a consistent basis. So it goes both ways. LSU's got a few more of those young players, but there's certainly Tennessee players that kind of have that benefit as well. And guys that aren't freshmen, Jordan Beck, Drew Gilbert, who were sophomores, but this is their first ever time through the SEC. This is their first ever NCAA tournament. So I think those guys have shown a lot of growth. I mean, look at how much Jordan Beck and Drew Gilbert struggled hitting the ball at the start of SEC play. Those guys have shown a lot of growth too. So it's a benefit in some ways to LSU, but it goes both ways, and Tennessee certainly sees the positive aspects of it too.
It definitely goes both ways. That is for sure. And the main guy that it benefits Tennessee is Blade Tidwell and also really Chad Dallas, because Chad Dallas did not get to pitch in SEC play last season because of COVID. And Chad Dallas was a JUCO signee. So last year was his first year with the program. So Chad Dallas, Blade Tidwell, they'll start Friday and Saturday. That's not official. Tony Vitello did admit on the Tony Basilio show on Thursday, I believe it was Wednesday or Thursday, whatever day it was. He did admit that Chad Dallas will start on Saturday, game one against LSU. And I would be surprised if they went away from Blade Tidwell on Sunday in that game two. And Will Heflin in game three on Monday if that needs to be played. So we talk about it benefiting both sides. Tennessee may get the benefit from the most of any benefit because of Blade Tidwell, because Blade Tidwell has looked as good as anybody the last couple of weeks. His last start against Liberty on Saturday wasn't as crisp as his previous couple of starts had been. Through 106 pitches, didn't make it through the sixth inning. Part of that was because Liberty had some really good at bats on him. He pitched really well. He just wasn't as crisp as he was in those last couple of outings, the SEC tournament, Arkansas, South Carolina to finish the season. So I think it really benefits Tennessee that these younger guys have a ton of baseball under their belt with Blade Tidwell, because he's ready to rock and roll, and he's going to be put in a situation to either help send Tennessee to Omaha or save Tennessee season.
He is, and the fact that he wasn't as crisp against Liberty as he's been the last few starts, and still threw what, five and a third, I think is how many innings he threw, just gave up one earned run. I mean, that shows how much he's grown since that LSU start right at the beginning of SEC play, because he had a good stretch of starts in there where a bad start was five innings, five runs instead of five innings, one run, obviously against some better offenses. But yeah, you have to feel confident about where Blake Tidwell's at. The one thing, the big storyline that I guess I don't think many people are talking about, but is the one I really have my eye on entering this weekend, is that Chad Dallas start. Because I think if Tennessee gets past the first game, if Tennessee wins the first game, I would be floored, stunned if they don't win, because they have a big pitching advantage in the game on Sunday and the game on Monday if it gets there. You have the one pitching advantage all weekend LSU has the advantage on. Landon Marceau, he's been great all season, was good in the start in Knoxville that Tennessee won. And Chad Dallas, he's been good, but consistently all year, he gives up the home run ball. That's kind of his MO. That's how he's going to throw strikes. He's going to give up some home runs in return. But right now, Lindsey Nelson Stadium is playing really, really small. We saw that last weekend. We saw him have some struggles. And this is an LSU offense, to my point earlier, that has a lot of firepower at the top of the order, can hit the long ball, can score runs in a hurry. I think that makes the matchup difficult, challenging. Again, Chad Dallas has been good. I was hoping to ask Tony Vitello about that. If there was anything you talk about that? Is there anything you change in approach? But I think that's going to be something really interesting to watch, because as good as Dallas has been, I don't think the matchup is great for him. I don't think the way Lindsey Nelson Stadium is great for him. And then just to the point that I started with, but if Tennessee finds a way to win that game, beat Landon Marceau, they're sitting in a great spot. And I think to your point on Blake Tidwell, that's Saturday game is the most likely game Tennessee would lose. That puts a lot of pressure on a true freshman to salvage the season. While I feel confident he's been really good, I think that makes it a huge moment and something that would be really interesting to see how he responds. But again, it almost goes the other way too. If Tennessee loses that first game, I don't think you need to see the panic that you might in a lot of situations where you lose the first game of a three-game series that you have to win, because I think Tennessee's pitching is better those next 2 days, and I think Tony Vitello and his team won't be panicked if that happens.
And Chad Dallas, I mean, from my perspective, there is a little worry because he has been susceptible to the home runs this season, because he is a guy that pounds the strike zone. And by virtue of pounding the strike zone and letting your defense work, you're going to get got at some point. Gerrit Cole, everybody who knows me knows I'm a diehard Yankees fan. I watch every single Yankees game. Even if I can't watch it live, I go back the next day and put it on the TV. Even if I know what the score was, I'll put it on the TV while I work. I see every single Yankees game, every single pitch. And Gerrit Cole is so fun to watch. And his stuff allows him to do this. His plus fastball that's 98, 99 and just unhittable sometimes. He pitches up in the zone and he gets got at times because he fills up the strike zone. And Chad Dallas doesn't have a Gerrit Cole fastball. But Chad Dallas has that same mindset of filling up the zone, letting the defense work for him. And because of it, he gets got at times. I mean, it's as simple as that. That's part of baseball. When you're a pitcher who fills up the zone, people are going to hit home runs off of you because, again, you're filling up the zone. You're giving them pitches to hit. And LSU's lineup has really turned on the power bats the last month or so. I believe Tennessee has hit 92 on the season. I think LSU has hit 88. Maybe Ryan can look that up real quick. If not, it's not a big deal. I know LSU has hit a ton of home runs, and it's from several different guys in their lineup. Dylan Cruz, we talked about him earlier. Trey Morgan's more of an average guy. He's only got 5 home runs on the season. Gavin Dugas, the left fielder, he had a big Eugene regional. Kate Dowdy, Drew Bianco. They have a lot of guys with power in their bat. So, Ryan, I'll be curious to see how Chad Dallas, a home run hitter. I just got a text that said Kumar Rocker just threw a 3-pitch inning. So that threw me off track. And we are recording right here at noon on Friday. Again, I've been under the weather all week, so I had to push it back a couple of days. And the Super Regionals are officially off and running. East Carolina and Vanderbilt are the first game of the day. There's four games today and then four games tomorrow. Well, I guess a lot more than four games tomorrow. Everybody will be playing tomorrow, but four games today. And Vanderbilt, East Carolina are the first game. And apparently Kumar Rocker just threw a three-pitch inning, which is pretty incredible. But LSU has a lineup that hits a lot of homers. Chad Dallas, the guy that gives up home runs, can he, as he has done much of the season, limit those to just solo home runs? I think that's a big question to watch, Ryan.
Yeah, I definitely think it is. And you were dead on your numbers. Good research, buddy. 92 for Tennessee, second place in the SEC, 88 for LSU, third place. So it's – and look, he pitched really well. LSU's start was one of, what, his two or three best starts of the season. He was really strong in that game. He gave up one solo home run but limited to that, gave Tennessee seven innings. It's just – it's going to be a challenge for him because – this park is playing – we saw it last weekend. It's playing really small right now. And LSU, to your point, has the bats to make him pay. So it'll be interesting to see. And I think that puts – and it's kind of like this anytime Chad Dallas starts, but a little bit more pressure on Tennessee's defense. Be crisp. Don't give LSU any additional opportunities because if they get them and they take advantage of them, more often than not, it's probably going to be via a home run and it's going to add up some – the runs will add up on you.
It was a six-pitch inning. My supposed trustworthy friend, Rob Harvey. Home run Harvey. Yes, boo this man. Rob Harvey lied to me. So everybody tweet at Rob Harvey on Twitter and tell him that he's a liar and he doesn't know what he's talking about. He said the ESPN app lied to him. Still, six-pitch inning, pretty impressive, but not as impressive as a – it's not as jaw-dropping or stop you mid-sentence as – three pitches, but Kumar is off to a good start, apparently. Let me ask you this, Ryan. We had Chris Burke on the show on the Swain event Friday morning, and I asked him about Chad Dallas and the home runs, and he didn't talk anything specific about Chad Dallas and LSU's hitters. He actually went big picture and talked about Tennessee needing to push out the outfield fence, extend the fences, and you talked about the fences, or not the fences per se, but you talked about the home runs flying out of the stadium and Lindsey Nelson playing favorable to hitters a few moments ago. And that made me think of Chris Burke's comments about needing to push the fences back. What do you think of when you hear about pushing the fences back?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the first thing I think of is, you know, all the talk about what's Tennessee going to do with the stadium? How are they going to renovate it? How are they going to add seats? If you add seats in the outfield, do you take out the road behind it? And that's kind of my first thought is it almost feels like you could make that a joint venture. Now, it looks like Tennessee is more inclined to put some double-decker patios out in left field, kind of like they have now, just add more of those. But if you were to do a big renovation and if you wanted to move the walls out, because, again, if I'm going roundabout, Mike, I'm really going roundabout to get my answer here, but I think this is
– go for it.
For my next one. If you're – for the most part, I don't think the stadium has been a problem, the length of the walls, because it's cold weather in Knoxville for a lot of the season, and Tennessee hasn't played a whole lot of June baseball at home. But with Tony Vitello, you're building around him, and your plans are to be playing a lot of June baseball, which makes me think, yeah, maybe it's a good idea to move these fences out a little bit. And if you do that, it almost seems like you almost have to take Todd Helton Road out or cut it off there where it doesn't run all the way back past the football complex. So if you do that, I think it opens up some more intriguing options for how you expand the stadium. Because I think if you're going to make that a full mission, expand the park, take out the road, that gives you a lot of room to put seats in. And I don't know whether you'd want to do that in right field or in left field, kind of deeper towards center where they don't have the patios, or describe the patios all together. I think that opens up a whole lot of interesting opportunities.
Yeah, and Chris's point was that it'll help with recruiting, because if you expect to host a regional – year after year after year, and super regionals, hopefully year after year after year, you have that expectation at least. And Tony Vitello, I continue to feel great about him staying. I feel better on June 11th than I ever have about him staying at Tennessee. If he stays at Tennessee over the next decade, Tennessee is going to make more regionals. So you get into the summertime when the air is warmer and the ball starts flying out more because of the temperature and whatnot. You want to be able to still recruit the Garrett Crochet type of pitchers, and that is something that you can sell them on, because you don't want to be nervous every time you throw a pitch that it could go for a homer. Like, Jordan Beck should have caught that ball in the first inning against Wright State. But even aside from that, like, a line drive like that should not get out of the stadium for a home run. So I thought that was interesting that Chris brought that up as a recruiting tactic, because you have this expectation going forward of playing in more regionals. Then your pitchers and you as a coaching staff should not be worried about giving up a fluky homer because the fence is in so shallow. So push the fence back a little bit to help out your pitchers. And I didn't think about it that way, but I think it's a great point. And if Chris Burke is talking about it, I'm sure he's spoken to Tony about it, or vice versa. So something to keep an eye on moving forward. We talked about Tennessee's pitching this weekend. With LSU, Landon Marceau is going to pitch on Saturday. Paul Maneri is supposed to meet with the media at 4:10 Eastern this afternoon. So I have not seen LSU starting rotation publicly yet. I don't know if he'll even say it today at his media availability, or if they'll put something out discussing who will pitch when. But Landon Marceau, their ace, Ryan, is expected to pitch on Saturday. And I'm very curious to see how he does. He has had a good season. He's 7-6 with a 2.44 ERA, started 16 games, has a complete game to his credit. He's thrown 99 innings this season. He struck out 112 hitters in those 99.2 innings, and opponents are hitting .237 off of him. So he's had a great year. He's a great pitcher. He's a lefty, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe he's right. I don't know. I've had a long week. Double check on that for me real quick, if you don't mind. Yeah. But I'm curious. He is righty. Okay, I don't know what I'm thinking of. My bad. He pitched in that Friday of the last regular season series. So he pitched that Friday, turns around and pitches on Tuesday of the SEC tournament. Then he comes back and pitches on Friday of the NCAA regional, turns around and pitches on Monday night of the NCAA regional, has a quick turnaround. He pitched late in the game on Monday against Oregon, and now he's going to get the ball on Saturday. I wonder about him just running out of gas, Ryan.
I think that's a really, really fair concern or point. And, you know, you asked me who was better for Tennessee to face, LSU or Oregon. Watching the game, that was one of my thoughts, was I'll tell you what's going to be best for anything for Tennessee is if LSU wins this game, they get Landon Marceau in there, throw a couple innings, and that's exactly what happened. So the guy that, you know, I talked about earlier is definitively LSU's best arm, and they have rode him to get here, which is what you have to do. I mean, we saw Tennessee do it with Sean Hundley last weekend. We've seen Arkansas do it with Kevin Copps all season long, but I think that sets up and gives Tennessee certainly a potential to see not quite as crisp, not quite as high velocity from Marceau. And again, if Tennessee wins that first game, I think they're sitting in a just outstanding position.
Yeah, and the rest of their pitching staff doesn't really scare you, at least in my opinion. They have good arms, don't get me wrong. AJ, I guess you say, is that last name Labis? Who knows? My bad, AJ, for butchering your name. And then you have McKeel Hilliard. So two good arms, but nobody that really terrifies you. They have Devin Fontenelle, who comes out of the bullpen. He's their closer. And if you watch the regional, he was kind of all over the place and nearly blew the game for them the first time they beat Oregon on Sunday night, if I remember correctly. He looked like a wild thing, and more the wild than the thing. So just not a whole lot on that pitching staff that really, if you're Tennessee, should intimidate you. Especially last time Tennessee faced LSU, they were facing Jaden Hill, likely first round arm. He had an injury come up that cost him his season. What was it, Tommy John that he has to have?
Yes.
Yes, that's what I thought. So he's out for the year, and I hate that for him because he was going to be a first round pick. At least he will at some point. So LSU's pitching staff, Ryan, I think Tennessee has the advantage there. You are concerned about pitching depth as it relates to Tennessee, but that's more of a Omaha concern than a three-game series, and maybe you don't even need a third game. Pitching depth shouldn't creep into play here.
No, it shouldn't, and you have to feel – I mean, you have to feel excellent about Camden Sewell and Sean Hundley. Those guys have just been great. I mean, Hundley has been really good all year. Sewell's been dominant the last month, and then I think Tennessee's feels really good before they're out with Redmond Walsh. So three games, you have three relievers who have been really, really solid for you, who you're going to lean on those three to give you innings out of the bullpen. And then I've talked about it on here. We've talked about it on here. Tennessee's starting pitching has done such a good job of making it easier for the bullpen. They've consistently gone deep into outings to make the usage less for the bullpen. And I think that will play, as always, play big, pay big dividends this weekend. And the one note I will say on LSU's pitching and Mikhail Hilliard, his numbers haven't been great overall on the season. I think, what, 4.54 or something like that is ERA. But he's been better in SEC play, and he's been better since he became the true third starter. His SEC ERA is 2.84. It's kind of been Will Heflin-esque. He's not a guy that's going to go super deep into games as a starter, but he's consistently gotten LSU 4, 5, 6 innings of solid baseball since he's been a starter. So I do think he's a little bit better than maybe the numbers indicate. He's been a little bit more effective in his new role than the numbers would indicate. But as a whole, it's not an LSU pitching staff outside of Marceau that really strikes much fear into you. And I think Tennessee has a starting pitching advantage. And in a three-game set, three-game super regional, I think Tennessee's bullpen, you have to feel really, really strong about it.
Yes. In a three-game regional, you feel really strong about that. And with Omaha, you know, there's games or there's day offs in between each game. So you do have extra days to rest there, and we'll get into that conversation if Tennessee can make it through this weekend. All right, it's time to stick your neck out there, Ryan. You're gonna call for the upset, or are you going to? Actually, we're not gonna go there. We'll hold off on predictions. I want to get your thoughts on one more thing, the block party. I want to get your thoughts on the block party. Do you think that we're gonna see a good attendance out on the street behind Lindsey Nelson Stadium?
I think we will. I think we will see good attendance, and kudos to Tennessee's athletic department for getting that going quickly and putting that together. And there's just so much excitement around this team right now that I think there are people that would come, period, just to go and, you know, with no envisioning of getting into the stadium. But also with the fact that they left, however, is it 100 tickets, something like that, that they have left over to sell at the gate. I think you'll see people who are going, trying to ideally get one of those, end up, you know, they don't get it, they'll go to the block party. So I think there's enough excitement that they'll have a good crowd there, and it should just add to a really good environment in Lindsey Nelson Stadium, but now it's going to be expanded to all around Lindsey Nelson Stadium.
Will there be as many people outside of the stadium as inside of the stadium? So we'll go with 4,000. Do you think Tennessee will get 4,000 people outside of the stadium?
I'll say no. I think they'll probably, if I had to give a rough estimate, I'll say in the 2,500 range.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree. But it should be a pretty cool scene, very similar to what the Raptors did when they were trying to win the championship, the NFL draft in Nashville. There's several examples. I think it'll be a really cool scene. And I hope that they can find a way to make sure that there's no delay on the feed. That way, the reaction inside the stadium and the reaction outside of the stadium coincides with one another. I mean, it would still be cool if, you know, you have the reaction inside the stadium and then 5 seconds later you hear the reaction outside of the stadium. That'd still be pretty cool and funny. But if you could get it, you know, at the same time, it'd just make it even louder. And even like, aside from when like Tennessee hits a home run or scores, If the LSU pitcher is struggling like that Wright State pitcher was in the bottom of the ninth inning, and the folks outside see that on the television, they're going to get just as loud. So I think Tennessee needs to find a way to make sure that there's no delay there. But Ryan, Tennessee or LSU, who wins this weekend and who heads to Omaha?
I'm going with Tennessee. I'm not pulling the upset. And for me, it's just as simple as this. And I've said it on here before when I've predicted games. Every single weekend this year, Tennessee has played a team that talent level is even or worse than them, or is overall a team that's worse than them, has done worse than them. They have answered the bell. And times when you wonder, are these guys going to be able to stay motivated? They've done it. Obviously, that's not a question this weekend. Is the stage too big? Is the all the talk around it too big? I don't think it is at all. Tennessee's had, this is the third weekend this year that's been like, this is the biggest weekend of Tennessee baseball since when? I mean, it's the third one they've had on top of playing for an SEC championship. So I think they're as ready for the moment as they can be. I think they're the better team. I think that has shown all season long. And all season long, when they've been the better team, they've picked up series wins. I think it'll show up again this weekend. I think they'll get the series win and punch your ticket to Omaha.
I'm with you. I'm picking Tennessee as well. Let me get your thoughts on this before I kind of explain my reasoning why. The only thing that would surprise me is if LSU swept Tennessee. I would not be surprised if LSU won the series, but I think the only way LSU wins the series if it goes to Monday, if it goes to a third game, Tennessee winning anyway. If they sweep LSU, if they win in three games, if LSU wins in three games, none of that would surprise me. The only thing that would surprise me is if LSU comes in here and goes 2-0.
Completely agree. And I'll even add, you said LSU, if they're going to win, needs to make it to Monday. If LSU is going to win, they have to win Saturday night too. I'll throw one in there, a little bold prediction too.
There you go. No, I just super simplistic, just kind of like what I was talking about earlier with LSU and Oregon. I think Tennessee's the better baseball team, and on paper, Tennessee should advance. But we don't play the game on paper, and there are external factors that aren't involved with the game of baseball, and this feeds into my prediction. All of those factors are in Tennessee's favor. I think the crowd will absolutely have an impact. I know that LSU is more used to this type of atmosphere than an Oregon or a Gonzaga, the other potential opponents. But I do think that the crowd will make a difference. I think this baseball team is, again, better on paper than LSU, but also this team is resilient, and this team always finds a way to win. And I said it on the pod after we recorded post Drew Gilbert Grand Slam, like even going into that inning when Tennessee was down 3 runs to Wright State, I truly did not feel like Tennessee was going to lose that game. I just felt like some way, somehow Tennessee was going to win. And I think that will continue to be the case this weekend in Knoxville. So I do think Tennessee wins this weekend. I'll say Tennessee wins in three. I'm not bold enough that Tennessee sweeps LSU. I'm not as concerned for Tennessee about LSU as others are. So we'll see what happens. But I think Tennessee takes care of business this weekend and beats LSU. Any thoughts from you on the way out the door?
No, I guess one little thought I had, just going back to the block party. Your point, I think, is really good on them needing to get the broadcast at the same time, because you look at a lot of the situations where it's happened. I know the Predators did it for the Stanley Cup. It's all been inside arenas, so you can't really hear the fan reaction, and that doesn't spoil what's going on outside. If it's 5-second, 10-second delay, I'm sure it'll still be fun. I'm sure it'll still be a cool scene, but that seems like that'd be a pretty serious viewing displeasure for the people outside the stadium if they're kind of already 5 seconds behind, right beside the stadium, can hear the reaction, and things are spoiled for them a little bit. Like, we're watching a game on Watch ESPN, and I click on stat broadcast too early, and boom, it's two at bats. There were two at bats ahead of the online stream, and I know what happened.
Yes, that can get annoying, but that'll do it for this edition of the Diamond Vols podcast. Be sure to stay locked into VolQuest throughout the next couple of days, as myself and Ryan will bring you plenty of coverage from Lindsey Nelson Stadium for this weekend's Super Regional between Tennessee and LSU. You can follow Ryan on Twitter at rshump00. You can follow me on Twitter at BenMcKee14. So for Ryan Shumper, I am Ben McKee. Enjoy the weekend. We will do our post-game podcast like we have been doing. So We will talk to you all again Saturday night after Tennessee and LSU at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. We hope you all have a great day and a great weekend.